Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Catch and Shoot 2.0 is a presentation of Pure Hoops Media. Catch and Shoot 2.0 goes well with both red and white and is perfect with the workout of your choice. Our hosts are Aaron Berlin, a former Kansas Jayhawk who believes the Orlando Magic will win the championship. Eventually. His partner is Otto Strong, a man who has covered the NBA since before Dennis Rodman got his first tattoo. Fellas?
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's edition of Catch and Shoot 2.0. I am Otto Strong, sitting in the chair, and my co-host this week is going to be Bruce Bernstein, as Aaron Berlin is off. Bruce, how you doing?
I'm doing okay, Otto. Hopefully all is well in your corner of the world.
Well, the world is a different place these days, isn't it? Last Wednesday we were watching NBA games, settling in for a night of what was going to be a pretty good contest, and then we saw that Rudy Gobert tested positive for coronavirus. What? And then another player, Donovan Mitchell, the next day, and it's been insane ever since.
Well, as we were briefly discussing before we started rolling on the show here, Rudy Gobert really was the first domino. Once Rudy Gobert tested positive and the NBA commissioner Adam Silver and those who advised him made the decision to wave the white flag on the season for the next month, that's when everything else followed. So in many ways, you know, the NBA was sort of, showing leadership in the world of sports in some ways.
Right. So I feel like we were in one stage, in one kind of place, heading into Wednesday night. And between Wednesday night and then what happened the next day with conference tournament, college basketball tournaments being suspended, and then that led way to other college non-basketball events being suspended, and then ultimately the NCAA suspending its tournaments and Major League Baseball and everything that has happened since. But going back to Wednesday night, it felt like we were in one place heading into that that announcement about Rudy, and then in another place since then.
Everything about the news cycle since the dam broke last week has been minute by minute changes. Just about, I mean, every single thing that it's almost like an earthquake beneath our society's feet. Because just when you feel like you might be ready to get your balance again, something else huge happens, and you're knocked off. Off balance yet again. And I think the very nature of this that's so frightening for so many people is that we don't really have any kind of like an end date. And especially those of us who are such sports people, we always know that the game is going to have a beginning and then it's going to have an end. And we know about how long it's going to be. And we're going to have a result at some point, and it's going to be a win, a loss, a tie, some sort of resolution. But this thing isn't like that. We have no idea when it's going to end. We don't know what the resolution's going to be. And I think the uncertainty of it all is what has everybody so on edge.
Hey, Bruce, let me ask you this. You are the Jedi Master when it comes to working NBA and NBA finals and things like that. You've been doing it for many a year. I'm not going to disclose how many years, but you've been doing it a long time. What do you, looking into your crystal ball, what do you think would be an appropriate step for the league to take at this point? I know, knowing we don't know a lot, but we are aware of what the calendar is and the how much time it takes to start games and restart games. What do you think will happen the rest of the way?
One of the things that's an underrated aspect of all of this thing is that you have hockey concurrently having the same issues that the NBA has. And a lot of what the, when the people make the schedule at the beginning of the year, shout out to Tom Corelli and his crew in New Jersey, a lot of what they have to factor in is the other sports that kind of play in the same arenas as the NBA teams. In some cases, it's the NHL. In some cases, it's college. So there's going to be some of that, but let's just assume that that all gets worked out the way they do going into the season. Although, you know, midstream, I'm sure it's going to be a lot tougher. But the main thing is, I think, we have to get the societal health under control. Nothing really needs to happen until that is sort of secure. Sports needs to know its place. And right now, sports' place is to sit this one out, let society heal itself and establish, you know, firm ground as far as our ability to function as a society, and then worry about that. As far as I'm concerned, they've played about 2/3 of the games of the regular season when the season ended. If they had to freeze the standings at this point and say, all right, we think we can get a playoffs together, we'll start it, you know, June 1st or whatever, I think they've had enough regular season games in the books where they could use that and launch the playoffs based on that. Nobody right. who's – no, I don't think there's too many people out of the playoffs as of now that are would be getting into the playoffs if they played 20 more regular season games. A couple of exceptions.
Totally with you with regard to society. I mean, you know, sports is at best, you know, fun and a nice diversion. And no way does it supersede anything. I guess I was only thinking of it from an NBA lens. And, you know, what would a postseason or a playoffs or the rest of the season look like? You know, for my money, I believe that they have played enough games. It'd be odd to have, you know, again, realizing it's secondary to the primary and getting society back on track. But assuming that will take care of itself at some point, just talking about the NBA as an element within that, it'd be hard to see having 2 months off and then going straight to playoffs. And there'll be some kind of a ramp up time. And that also assumes, you know, they work out their scheduling, an arena, you know, situation, but it's going to be a bumpy ride for the next, couple of weeks or months. But, since we're talking playoffs and since we had mentioned playoffs, kind of a slight segue here to, a big story in the world of sports, that being Tom Brady basically saying that he's not going to be back with the Patriots. And you, before we got on the air, Bruce, you had a parallel that you saw with regard to the Patriots and another franchise. I'll let you expand on that.
Well, I've thought for a long time. In fact, when I was at ESPN, I made this suggestion numerous times to different shows that I thought it would be really interesting to compare the San Antonio Spurs organization to the New England Patriots organization. There are many, many similarities in how those organizations have functioned during their 20 or 15 to 20 years of dominance over, you know, since the turn of the century, pretty much. And with Tom Brady now moving on, we're now going to get a chance to see how Bill Belichick handles life after Brady and compare it to how Greg Popovich handled life after Duncan. The two franchises have a lot of similarities. And as we've seen with Pop, I mean, Pop didn't become less of a coach because Tim Duncan retired, but his team certainly has less of a record, thus showing that, you know, it doesn't matter how great a coach you are. If you don't have talent, you're not going to probably win championships.
So are we saying here somehow that I'm trying to think, so Tony Parker is Julian Edelman? Is that what we're saying here?
Well, look, I mean, here's the thing. Pop had Manu Ginobili, future Hall of Famer, and Tony Parker, future Hall of Famer, to kind of sort of ease the transition into whatever was coming next. But in basketball, that's so much easier, right? Because the number of key guys on your team is like 1/4 the number of key guys on a football team, right? So whereas Julian Edelman, and I think I also mentioned Devin McCourty, and then there's other guys like Matthew Slater, the special teams whiz, who's in the Pro Bowl every year of his career. Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be, you know, analogous. I'm thinking more in terms of, I had certain tent posts for each of the franchises that I thought you could have. There were comparable things. So I'll tick through them really quickly. Stability of ownership. Peter Holt, Robert Kraft, both have owned the teams forever. Cranky, media-hating coach, Greg Popovich, Bill Belichick, still there. Unselfish, beloved by his teammates, superstar, Tim Duncan, Tom Brady. And then number of championships, 6 in 19 years, 5 in 16 years. Roughly the same fraction, if you were. It's a little bit different. And then it's funny, I used to work with Bruce Bowen, and Bruce used to say, you know, Pop would always talk about KYP, KYP. What's KYP? Know your personnel. I said, oh, well, we know that Bill Belichick also had an acronym, DYJ, do your job. So these were the things that I thought were sort of like, oh, you know, some similarities along the foundation of what their success has been built on. So we'll see what's next for Bill Belichick. Patty Mills ain't walking through that door, Belichick. From the leadership of Greg Popovich and Bill Belichick to current examples of leadership around the NBA, not only from franchises, but from individual players, we've seen some guys that have done some very admirable things, haven't we, Otto?
Yeah, in the last couple of days, you know, Kevin Love being the first tier, donating $100,000 to assist with folks who are going to lose income as a result of the work stoppage for coronavirus. Steph Curry, another one comes to mind. Mark Cuban, Dan Gilbert, and then there's Zion Williamson. I mean, you got a 19-year-old kid, just got into New Orleans, not his city, really. Yet hasn't really taken ownership of the city in terms of, you know. Yeah, it hadn't even had probably enough time to move into a place or find a place. And here he is saying that he's going to cover the employees' salaries through whatever period of time that they're going to need coverage. I mean, it's a tremendous act by great young talent.
At times of crisis, leadership at any level is needed. I mean, of course, we would all look to political leaders first at a time like this. But in our own situations, in our own families, neighborhoods, towns, whatever, we're all capable of showing leadership in our own way. I'm not patting myself on the back here because I'm sure I'm not the only person who's done this. But we have a couple who lives across the street from us that are in their 70s. And yesterday I went out to the grocery store. So I reached out to her and I asked her, is there anything I can pick up for you at the store? And she was so grateful. She's there, Bruce, we have the best neighbors. She's there. And she mentioned one of our other neighbors by name and said, Tom had asked me about that. Thank you so much for thinking of us. And I think what we're seeing with Zion Williamson here is a really beautiful example of somebody who's just got a good moral compass, a good conscience, who's exerting leadership in a very, very big way on a very big stage. And he's 19 years old. And there is so many people that could learn so much from this young guy, Otto. I mean, he is, as I said on Mike Wise's show, the one we did a few days ago, I am now his fan for life.
me too. Now, there's another guy who also donated or pledged a certain sum of money. I believe it was $500,000. And that's a guy that we talked about earlier in Rudy Gobert. And you wonder will history view him the same way, given the fact that prior to all of this, he was seen touching the mics, touching the table shortly after as he got up to from an interview. And he was clowning around in the locker room and hugging guys and trying to get in guys' face. And you wonder, well, how will history view Rudy Gobert?
I think as far as fitting into the brotherhood of the Jazz moving forward, I'm thinking that Rudy Gobert's got to have an awful lot of one-on-one meetings with every one of his teammates, and he has to really try and make amends for this. Now, look, I don't think there's a single person who believes that he had any ill intentions when he was doing what he did. He was being goofy and kind of careless and flippant and, not really taking things seriously as he should have. But at the same time, he lives and works in one of the most conservative areas of the entire United States. So while I think he'll probably be able to mend fences with his teammates, will he be able to be beloved by the fans, also known as the customers, also known as the people who essentially pay the Utah Jazz organization's bills? That's going to be a little bit of a more difficult question, I think. I mean, Otto, what do you think? Do you think they may need to trade him eventually simply because of they just have to? I mean, how do you feel about it?
Well, I'll say Rudy, to me, if you watch the tape, seems to me to be the, like I said earlier, it feels like there were two versions of this story, or two episodes, if you will. There's the prior to the NBA shutting down, and then after the NBA, you know, shutting it down, or being the organization that started what I believe to be started kind of us taking as a country, taking it much more seriously than we did prior to. So I don't think that people may grouse now. I'd like to think that once we move beyond this, assuming that we will at some point and not too distant future, people will not, hold him personally responsible for the downfall of Western society. I mean, I don't think that's where we're going. But at the same time, he will be giving some very nice holiday gifts this year, I would imagine, as a way to kind of acknowledge the fact that that a wrong has been committed. And hey, he's a young guy. He could learn from things as we all can. And I expect that he will get that benefit. But I will say, I think we can combine. I'm going to say this without a doubt. Rudy Gobert gets our bruh of the week. I think we could agree on that. Would you not?
Bruh. Hey, listen, I think, you know, when it comes to a situation like this, your sort of reputation prior to this goes a long way in sort of determining how you'll be accepted or not accepted moving forward. Rudy Gobert, by all accounts, was always a classy guy, a good teammate, a nice person. And so that should mitigate in his favor. And I hope that it does, because I never really felt anything other than sort of horror at that whole thing. Not so much anger at him, but just like we said, bruh, what are you doing? You know? So hopefully his extreme generosity in the, you know, aftermath of this, I mean, $500,000 donated. I mean, that's a lot more than I've heard, I mean, I think Steph Curry's donation might have exceeded that, but I haven't heard any other ones that were bigger than that. So hopefully, you know, it's clear that he's remorseful. Hopefully he can reconcile with his teammates. And I would imagine they know him better than anybody, and they'll be the ones, you know, I think that will accept him and hopefully, help us move on. I mean, do we want to mention that column that I saw last week? Somebody, I believe it was Stefan Bondi, who is Daily News, right, Otto? New York Daily News? Is that who Bondi's with? Not positive. But either he did this article or he tweeted an article from somebody else about how Rudy Gobert was almost like the canary in the coal mine for this whole thing. Once Rudy's thing happened, everything else kind of followed. And who knows? He might have inadvertently saved a whole lot of people's lives and prevented a whole lot of people from becoming sick.
Hey, so Bruce, so on a lighter note, obviously we're not watching NBA, but we're all sitting in front of our TVs. We're trying to pass the time with some distraction of some type. What are you watching these days to, catching up with something or binging a show?
Well, besides memorizing the name of every anchor on CNN and every field reporter on CNN, I don't know any of the producers' names because they don't do credits. But one of the shows that I'm catching up on, I'm not really that far behind, is Curb Your Enthusiasm. And the episode that my wife Nancy and I watched the other night was earlier in the season. Jeff was having his surprise birthday party thrown by his wife Susie, who's like the funniest person I think ever. She's hilarious. Chris Martin from Coldplay was at the party. And Larry's cardiologist, who happened to be Jeff's cardiologist also, was at the party. And he's sort of like a, what's the word for him? You know, he would like to attach himself to the celebrity world a little bit. So, my wife and I were watching. I was like, who the hell is this guy? He looks so familiar. And it turned out that he was one of the lawyers from Ally McBeal, which I think hasn't been on TV for about 15 years at least, maybe more. Otto, what was your most recent TV binge?
So I've been working a lot with the Star Telegram ever since what went down last week. There have been newsroom has kind of ramped up working on stories and such. So there hasn't been that much time, but when I do have a day off coming up soon, I would very much want to get into a show. I feel horrible saying that I've never seen it. Homeland.
Oh, watched it for a number of years. It was terrific.
Yeah, and another one that I started and stopped but want to get back to is The Ozarks, because Bateman is crazy, and I love everything that he's in. So I'm looking forward to getting back to that. But those are my big two.
I think Ozark, the new season, starts later this month, or did it already start and I missed it? I'm not sure, because I love that show. That show is great.
Yeah, I don't even know, because
we've been watching basketball all these years. Now we have to like reorient to the real world.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a problem.
Okay, well, that's the show for this week. Thanks to everybody for listening to this edition of Catch and Shoot 2.0. Want to thank my normal producer, but this week co-host, Bruce Bernstein, and we will see Aaron Berlin in next week. Also want to thank the producer, the man in the chair, because this is not CNN. We do acknowledge our producers. So that would be Scott Turkin, of course. And goes without saying, props to editor Ben Wolfen.
And we'd like to remind all of you that even though there are no games going on for the foreseeable future, Pure Hoops Media is like a cockroach after a nuclear war. We're still crawling and we're still doing our thing. So check out all of our shows. You got the Mike Wise Show every Monday. You have Full Court Press with Fanta and Adams, and they have Marcus Howard of Marquette this week, which is great. As you mentioned, Catch and Shoot 2.0. Aaron will be back next week. Monica McNutt with Buckets, Boards, and Blocks will drop a new show each Thursday. And BJ Armstrong and Eric Newman with the Pure Hoops podcast, they'll drop a new show each Friday. Please rate all of our shows, review, and give us a rating. But most of all, enjoy. See you next week, folks.
Catch and Shoot 2.0 is a presentation of Pure Hoops Media.